Hello and oh, leave it.
You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 481 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we're coming to you in different locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Rent, Washington, home of Leagues Cup champions, Seattle Sounders.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how bad it was.
Oh, the Seahawks have turned Tristan into a Sounders fan. Are we doing Seahawks hot takes?
No, I decided to stick with Mariners hot takes. You know what? We built a brand, and in this, there's one thing I know: when you have brand loyalty, you don't go against brand loyalty. So,
I mean, I agree with that assessment, I suppose.
Do you agree with the assessment that we have a brand for Mariners Hot Takes? Less of agree.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, sorry. I'm doing an exercise here. Should we do the normal thing, toast, or do we want to talk Seahawks?
Let's do toast then Seahawks.
Okay.
Then weekend recap, we can do. All right,
starting
off.
Came early this year.
I was saying we could do this as airing some grievances. If you want to, if you want to air some grievances, we can do it.
The whole thing is going to be airing grievances.
Congrats to the Seattle Storm on making the playoffs with Tuesday's thrilling
struggling victory over the Valkyries. Come on.
Over the Golden State Valkyries.
They did make the playoffs. Hey, if enough teams make it.
I mean, it's a lower percentage than it used to be at 8-13, including the Valkyries.
There we go. They were one of the five teams. They were not one of the five teams to not make it.
Well, we'll talk about who was one of the five teams, because that was exciting news. I mean, it was pretty much defined, but it was going to be the Storm of the Sparks.
I was doing a slow clap for the Storm for making it.
I got it.
There we go.
It is the 20th playoff appearance in franchise history, tying the Storm with the aforementioned LA Sparks and New York Liberty for most in WNBA history.
For just
of course, they
being
have
a team for a long time.
Fewer seasons than both the Sparks and Liberty, who were part of the inaugural league. So the only team with a higher percentage, as I posted on Blue Sky earlier, is in fact the Golden State Valkyries, who have made it 100% of the time.
There we go.
So plenty more on that later in the pod.
I didn't say that into the microphone as a tribute to Jan. every time I don't talk into the microphone, it's a tribute to Jan or Katie.
Which we weirdly was a tribute to the famous cousin Katie when Jan did it. Congrats to two-time reigning Big Ten co-offensive player of the week, Jonah Coleman, whose five rushing touchdowns tied the modern program record previously set by Hugh McElhaney with five in 1950 versus Washington State, and Corey Dillon in 1996 versus UCLA. Of course, you'll remember that Irvin Daly had seven rushing touchdowns against Whitman in 1919 for the non-modern program record.
How many points did they score in that game?
That's a good question. I'll take a look.
I think they did not drop 70, right? It's still only 270s of all time.
Well, no, that's also a modern era, I think.
Oh,
so
really?
It's possible they could have dropped 70. Let me see what kind of records we have on sportsreference.com for
it
the 19-19 season.
It must be so embarrassing for the UC Davis Aggies to be the second team that UW dropped 70 on after the lowly team from down south.
Oh, you know how many they scored on Whitman?
How many?
120. Don't believe Whitman still fields a football program.
Fair enough. I didn't know UC Davis fielded a football program. So,
what do you mean? Chris Peterson played there?
Did he really? I literally
had no idea.
Or at
least he started
idea.
His coaching career there. But yeah. What do you mean? I mean, UC Davis is a large school in the context of universities. I'm guessing its enrollment is pretty high, all things considered. I don't know. Maybe it's not.
I'm not. I know that they are not. Look, we'll talk about this later. I know that they are not a bad FBS team. He did play at UC Davis.
Yes.
This
Ocean's thing has me second guessing everything.
They are not. Whatever. Just say stuff. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to be right about everything. Sorry, I know who I'm talking to. Words matter.
32,000 undergraduates. That's pretty good.
I'm just being honest. I did not know. Like, I know that they are not a bad FBS program, and we will talk about that, because when UW dropped 70 on them, they're the best FBS program. But
exactly. I mean, that's almost as big as UW.
It was just literally information that I didn't know.
Whitman College has 1,500 undergraduates. So,
After that football score, they were just like, can't get
it
anybody to come here.
was not that long ago when Chris Peterson played there, they were D2, but now they have become in FCS power. All
F, did
right.
I say FBS? Whatever. Who cares?
No, I wasn't correcting you. I was correcting myself in my own head, as I often do. Or double checking at the very least. All right.
What does the FCS stand for?
Championship.
Football Championship Subdivision?
Which is weird because now a football bowl subdivision does have a 16-team playoff championship.
They don't have a
But,
16-team playoff
or
championship, but.
sorry, an 8-team. Wait, yeah.
Soon to be 16, all Big Ten.
The distinction is more trivial than it used to be, but I technically I believe it's still not organized by the NCAA, which is the distinction. But we're not here
Well,
to talk about the
this one might
mechanics.
not be for much longer either.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I'm just saying that the conferences could easily break from the NCAA, just do the shit
No,
themselves.
the point is the NCAA does not do the college football playoff, that it is its own organization.
Okay.
So, anyways, that's not what we're here to discuss, the mechanics of the college football playoff. You attended Sunday's Seattle Seahawks season opener against the San Francisco 49ers. A lot of alliteration there. And you have some thoughts on that game.
I mean, I thought we were going to do it more as a conversation rather than going into thoughts, but
I mean, you said we were going to air grievances.
Okay, so I went into this. It's funny because I feel like a lot of the dialogue that has happened around the Seahawks game, which we haven't talked about that much, you had an alternative take to the takes on Sunday. And I'm curious if you still have that same alternative take, but I don't want to get there just yet
Okay.
because first off, your alternative take is stupid. Second off, and wrong. Second off, the problem with this game was not Mike McDonald's decision making. The problem with this game was with the offensive coordinating and the play calling. And it's crazy to me that we have done this shit again. We fucking went around the globe so many times. We fired Pete Carroll, greatest coach in Seahawks history, just to get back to new Pete Carroll as head coach. We did the Sam Darnold, Geno Smith thing where he's slightly worse, but at least he's younger. That is it for the Seahawks. I feel like I'm doing this hot take style. But with Clint Kubiak as offensive coordinator and Mike McDonald's basically like off season of we're going to commit to the run game, they have gotten around to they played the most Seahawks game ever, all the way down to the time of possession on Sunday. Like, was this not a Pete Carroll ass game? 38 minutes for the 49ers. The Seahawks decided that they were going to run the damn ball. They ran it. They did that. And they averaged 4.6 yards per play. Do you know how many times last year, all of the season, the Seahawks averaged 4.6 yards per play or less?
I'm gonna guess like three.
Two times. That includes, do you remember what the most miserable game I've ever been to in my entire life was?
No, I've really
Bills
put it out of
31,
my memory.
Seahawks 10.
There you
Literally
go.
like one of the least fun games that I've ever been to in my entire life, partially just because the Bills were kicking our ass on offense. 5 yards per play in that game. Better than Clint Kubiak's offense from Ryan Grubb. Ryan Grubb took so much shit last year for this offense, and Ryan Grubb is the person who deserves an apology the most. Second off, they basically determined, I wanted to find the two games because they were also very close to, I just kept clicking through and I'm like, even the most brutal ones you remember, the Seahawks averaged like pretty good yards per play. Atlanta was 6.1.
Wait,
The San
I thought
Francisco,
they didn't beat Atlanta?
they did. I'm not saying this is just in losses. San
Oh, I
Francisco
see.
lost. I'm just clicking through what I have. San Francisco lost 36-24, 4.9 yards per play. We're sorry, Ryan. Giants lost to the Giants somehow inexplicably, 5.7 yards per play. Thanks, Geno. Brutal loss to the Lions, 42-29. That was 6.6 yards per play. Clint Kubiak could never beating the Rams on the road, 6.3 yards per play. Even this one, let me just pull this motherfucker out of the record books right here. 6-3, Seahawks over Chicago Bears, 5.2 yards per play. Clint Kubiak managed to, the only one that was worse was,
Two.
oh my God. I just keep, again, brutal loss to the Vikings. Thanks, Reek Woolen. 6 yards per play. Way better yards per play than the Vikings. Was this one of the ones that was worse? This was the one that was worse. Packers 30, Seahawks 13, 3.7. So it happened at a bad time of the season.
The other was, again, that the we're going to talk Jets. About at the end of the pod, at New York Jets. Again, the Seahawks won 4.5 yards per play.
We're talking about that at the end of the pod?
I mean, I don't know if you're aware of who was quarterback for the New York Jets at that time.
Okay. Oh, we're previewing it. I thought you were saying post-pod. That was 4.5. So one tenth of a yard better per play in that game. The rest of them, like the Cardinals game that they won 16-6, 4.7, they weren't all great. But there are some performances when you look back at it with the new context of this Clint Kubiak offense. And you say to yourself, maybe the problem wasn't Ryan Grubb. Maybe the players just aren't that good. Now, granted, they did get rid of Geno Smith and DK Metcalf in the offseason. But also, their determination was, they said, we're going to run the damn ball. They fucking Jimmy liked it this offseason. I said to you during on this very podcast, this offense never, ever works. The way that you run the ball well is by passing the ball well. You don't just determine that you run the ball well because we want to.
Was that on the podcast where you picked the Seahawks over?
I'm telling you, I'm not necessarily saying they're not going to be over. I still think the defense is going to be good. Like, there were some positives to take from this game. I'm not saying that there were no positives to take from this game, but they are doing it wrong right now. They are literally approaching the sport of football wrong by trying to have this offense, because it was it was 16 completions for Sam Darnold, 23 attempts. However, two of those were to Ken Walker. I don't know what the AJ Barner one. I can't remember what that was. But like the two Ken Walker ones were basically runs, or actually three receptions for Ken Walker. And you could just tab those on to the run total. They ran badly. Ken Walker especially ran badly. I loved going to the Discord. Like Luca at the game with me was getting too upset with Ken Walker. I was like, there are people around us, dog. You got to chill. I'm like, hey, the rest of the stadium doesn't feel the way we do about Ken Walker. So they still think he's good. But Sharp, even with that, like still under 4 yards per carry, maybe it's a good 49ers defense. I don't know. But they determine. And then who was drafted? The pick after. Again, I was pissed about this when they did it on draft night. They drafted a fucking guard with their first round pick, which process wise was terrible. And who was the pick after that?
Emeka Egbuka,
two touchdowns. Wait, how many yards did he have in that one? Because my fantasy team was pretty happy about it.
He had many yards.
67 yards. It wasn't like crazy. 67 yards and two touchdowns in his first ever game in the NFL. We could have had, do you know how good our receiving core would look all of a sudden if it was Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Emeka Egbuka instead of Cooper Kupp? John Schneider is bad at this.
I've exclusively put together some videos of what it might look like if you had an offense that had Emeka Egbuka and Jaxon Smith-Njigba.
Trade for Marvin Harrison Jr. too.
I don't know how his stats were. Is he available?
Marvin Harrison? No, he's going to be good. I think I kind of called it fantasy-wise on Marvin Harrison, too. But both teams, by the way.
Five catches, 71 yards, touchdown. Okay.
JSN was amazing in this game. Obviously, the fumbles. There were two fumbles. I couldn't remember what the other one was. But the fumble was brutal. But
the other fumble was the lateral that went out of bounds.
Oh, yeah, whatever. They even stole a Ryan Grubb play too. That was one of the things where I was like, Ryan Grubb did that. Like you fired this man and then you dip back into his playbook for the good play that he has. But like, I'm sorry. This was just, it was a complete and total failure of an offseason for the Seahawks process wise. I will give John credit for the Sam Darnold move. I think we're feeling fine about Sam Darnold right now. I'm feeling
thoroughly
good.
Fine.
About Sam Darnold. Geno also looked good for the Raiders as well. There were a few balls, like a pick that Geno threw, where I was like, yikes. I was like, that is the Geno Smith experience. Because he threw a pick just straight into double coverage. For what it's worth, Sam Darnold did nothing wrong. However, the approach to the sport of football, because it is a sport that you get the most, the decisions you make matter the most. And it's partially why football is a successful sport. Basketball, it looks all the same. Everybody has players. They're basically shooting threes, right? That's why basketball is a less interesting sport to watch live. Football, you get a choice.
You're on a roll, so I'm not going to bother to dispute that factually incorrect statement.
You know it's true. Come on. You get to the line of scrimmage, and you get a choice about what to do. And same with the front office. They get a choice of how to spend their money.
Coaching has more of an impact on play-to-play in football than
coaching
basketball,
and front office matters more in this sport. You get a choice of that first-round pick of how to spend it. You get a choice of how to spend your money, right? I mean, that's true in every sport, but like...
I would simply make a sport where there more than one position on the field matters if I were designing the perfect sport.
They went into the season, John Schneider and Mike McDonald, and said, let's do it wrong. Let's approach the sport of football wrong. They went out and hired Clint Kubiak, and Clint Kubiak threw one play action pass the entire game. This is what we were promised.
Is Mike McDonald like incepting this?
Does he hate play action? Mike McDonald's like, yo, play action. Like, he just doesn't like it when offenses do it, so he doesn't want our offense to do it.
Because the whole point of hiring, of going to the Kubiak system.
There was motion.
There was not that much motion.
Really? What are we doing? It's because we were just running the ball up the middle all the time.
The whole point of playing under center is because of the fact that it makes it easier to do play action. And then they just forgot to do the play action. I just don't understand. Did he like choke? Did he forget it in the moment? I cannot possibly understand it.
It is.
That was the whole point.
I'm curious what Alabama's play action. Alabama hasn't had to like dip into the, you know, they probably should have against Florida State. But like, I'm curious what Ryan Grubb's play action percentage is at Alabama. If it went way down with the Seahawks. Because I think it was pretty freaking high with the Huskies.
Yeah.
And then went way down. In which case, we know that we have the wrong coach.
I hope that it looks different on Sunday. That's all I can say. Because it's perplexing that you could have that. Like, the whole point is runs and passes. Everything looks the same. That's literally the concept of the offense. And then they chucked it all out the window on Sunday. And I just cannot possibly understand what happened.
So, okay, then there's the other move, the bad move that Mike McDonald made of the fourth down decision. And I knew at the moment.
Debatable move.
Okay, fine, debatable. In outcome-based was wrong. Process-based may have been okay. And honestly, maybe outcome-based might have been okay. And I sat there as the Seahawks were almost winning that game, and I was just like, I don't care. Because... it wasn't like, sure, steal a win from the 49ers. That feels good, right? Send home the 60,000 strong Niners fans who are in the building. But like, they got outplayed so thoroughly in this game.
Well, that's not true.
It's not true?
No.
Total yards, 384 to 230.
Well, to your point, it's because this was a Pete Carroll game where they ran so few plays. And that's
You run few plays because you were unsuccessful in the plays that you were running.
You run few plays because you succeed or fail on third down. And San Francisco succeeded an unsustainable rate on third down. And the Seahawks failed an unsustainable rate on third down, which is why the advanced stats between these two teams were not terribly different at all.
What was the... Well, there also were some big mistakes that Purdy made, too. But what... I didn't see how many three and outs they had.
I mean, almost none, because Brock Purdy kept converting on third down.
No, the Seahawks had. Because the three and outs is what basically killed them. It's like they go up to the line. There's like a moment where it feels like the Seahawks are going to be able to do something successful. And you're like, this has to be a drive. And then it's like, run... Oh, God. The one that was the most brutal drive where they did the like screen pass, basically, to Ken Walker. And it was like... let's just go home. You know what I mean? Like, this is terrible. Any negative play. I felt like Kyle Shanahan is a much better coordinator, obviously. Like, nobody's debating this. He's one of the best there is. But, like, there was another play where they got into, like, a first and long, and Kyle Shanahan just basically gave up on the drive. And I was like, what? Like, there are so many holes. I have problems with the Niners, too, from this game. The Niners coached a bad game in a lot of ways, and they didn't even play that good of a game. And after not playing that good of a game, they gained almost 400 yards on Mike McDonald's defense. So I mean, what do you think went right in this game?
My special teams was really good. The Seahawks were, the Niners were 15th in DVOA. The Seahawks were 21st.
Also the penalties that the Niners had, which it's kind of like, I don't know. I feel like that could have gone. Penalties almost always can go either way in a lot of ways. Like, I don't think they'd have like a scheme that's like a high penalty scheme or something.
Yeah.
That feels about right. The Niners played an average game and the Seahawks played a bad game. They probably, you said they were 25th?
21st.
21st. They should be worse than that. That's baking in some, I guess the preseason stuff wasn't very good either.
Baking in what? That's just based on this game.
And
it's not
just 1 week
adjustment.
DVOA. Okay.
Yeah. By the way, it's not so different from The Pittsburgh Steelers, the victorious Pittsburgh Steelers, who were 19th in DVOA in week one.
That is wild. Wow. Okay. Where are the Jets?
Oh, well, higher than that by definition. They're 10th. Things happen in week one. Again, the lack of play action is the thing to
It's not things happen in play. Like, I think that things can get fixed for what it's worth, but they approached it wrong. Like, and you've said this also with the Cooper Kupp signing. They could have just drafted Emeka Egbuka and been done, right? They could have just been good at wide receiver. There are other wide receivers that they could have drafted. And instead, they drafted a guard because they were like, well, if we're going to hire Clint Kubiak and run the ball and have this zone blocking scheme, which is a bad scheme to have, they looked at the Saints last year.
I don't agree that it's a bad scheme to have.
It hasn't worked. Clint Kubiak hasn't done it before, and they acted like he had.
I agree with that part of it, but a lot of people have done it with the zone blocking scheme. So I'm not gonna
Jags,
impugn
underrated
that.
Jags victory. Wow.
You're number four in DVOA. Huh. Obviously, again, not opponent adjusted, and their opponent is probably aggressively bad.
Okay, so Mike McDonald's decision to kick. I want to get the exact time that there was. I was saying this to Luca was the thing that is funny to me is about, like, we've only been watching college basically before this. College games can get decided in the first quarter. College games, a lot are decided before the game even starts, right? Watching an NFL game, it's basically like the game doesn't really start until the second half. Like, a lot of stuff happens, but like a game can't be won or lost until the second half. And then all of a sudden, I'm so used to the Seahawks where I'm like, there's going to be a moment we're going to look up and be like, oh, fuck, this is the entire game right here before we know it. And that moment came and Mike McDonald made the wrong decision in that moment. And I know that the bots have been like, or Ben's bot was like basically 50-50 either way, right? It's like a slight change.
Correct.
Between the two. There was, and then Mike McDonald, of course, kicked it in that situation. The chances of the Niners getting at least a field goal there was like infinite. You know, like, that's what it felt like in that moment when he kicked it. It was basically like, I hope there is enough time after they kick this for us to come down and get another field goal after that. Seahawks aren't stopping. We knew that. And then Mike McDonald gave an explanation, which this satisfied you, right?
I wouldn't say it satisfied me, but I thought it showed more thought than game tied, take points, burr.
What coach do you think actually says that? Like, you're basically like, Mike McDonald said a bunch of words, therefore I'm okay with it, because the reason you have the model is to not think all of those words. You have the model,
but the model
built in.
Doesn't
the Seahawks model said to go for it? The Seahawks model said to go for it, and he made the decision to not go for it.
All we know is it said to go for it on 4th and 1. We don't know what it said. Would probability, we don't know the strength of that recommendation. Those are a variety of things that come into play. And
but
one
we
of the
do
things
know
it's important
that the
to
model
recognize
said to go for it, and that he chose because of all these things that he thinks he can factor in better than a computer model.
But I think what I would tell you is there is a huge, there is a margin of error. And so if it's, even if it's 55-45, which to me is an unrealistically high-end assessment of where this could be if, again, you know, the public bots suggest that you should have kicked in that moment. Even then, the margin of error outweighs that.
Let me ask you a question. If there is a margin of error, who do you think is better at assessing that margin of error? A computer program
you
or
can't
Mike McDonald?
Assess the margin of error. The margin of error is randomness and uncertainty.
But the model is doing all of these things for him. It's supposed to be taking out the piece of Mike McDonald is factoring in all of these things, right? The model knows what the situation is.
All
the
models
model
are
knows
wrong.
The history.
Some models are useful, and NFL fourth down models are useful. But again, there are limits to that knowledge. And, you know,
it's literally
a decision that the model says is 55-45 could actually, in reality, when you factor in all the factors, be 45-55 the other way. That's very plausible.
Do you think that Dan Campbell would have gone for that fourth down?
Yes.
Do you think that Ben Johnson would have gone for that fourth down?
Probably, yes. One of the factors that goes into it is you're talking about an average offensive quality. And over the course of this game, these offenses had both not performed as well as they do on average. My number, like the one thing about it is, if they go convert that fourth down, the odds are still pretty good they're kicking a field goal at some point.
Yeah, but
on
way
the
more time goes off the clock.
And but that might not be a good thing because of the situation that actually played out where you have, it's a 2-for-1.
It still
situation.
Makes it, they scored way faster than, if you're asking Mike McDonald how fast are the 49ers scoring, they scored way faster than he thought they were scoring.
I'm but sure. Like, but the, well, they scored a touchdown way faster than he would have thought they were going to score. But I mean, like, if they had stalled out at the 30 and kicked a field goal, like, that certainly could have gone pretty quickly.
It was 3:42 that they kicked it. So you're basically getting to the 2-minute warning at that point. There's a good chance that you're getting to the 2-minute warning at least.
That's fine.
If they go for it and pick it up. And granted, the Niners scored in an absurdly fast amount of time, right? They scored in under 2 minutes, right? Like 1:50 or something like that.
But I don't think that is absurdly fast because one of the things about that situation is when you're on defense, you can control the clock with your timeout.
You spent all offseason and then you've determined that the corner that you've spent working with played one bad game. I mean, he's played a bad game, but it's just like a little bit knee-jerk to me. A horrendous game. But I'm also like, dog, you're the one coaching this team. Like, you're the defensive coach that's coming in here. And again, the same shit we dealt with for years. The defensive coach is the one who's losing us the game from decision-making on fourth downs and his defense not holding up. And I'm like, why are we doing this? What is the difference?
I'm going to be Mike Sean here, you know, in the book. Like, oh, the defense lost the game when the offense scored 13 points? The defense did not hold the game, which is harder
they didn't hold the game.
To do, which is the Legion of Boom Hero shows, is harder to do even for elite defenses than people think it is, because to the point that he was discussing, when offenses have four downs to work with, they tend to be much more successful than when they only have three downs to work with.
I think that is true, but they also could have done some things. If the Seahawks score a touchdown there, like, their chances of winning this game are absurdly high. Even with four downs.
Yes, obviously. Like, look, if they can, you know, based on the bot, if they convert it, their chances of victory go up to 72%.
If they convert that fourth down?
Yeah.
That's even without factoring in the, like, that's not saying that they score a touchdown there. That's a very high percentage chance of victory.
And I mean, it was 65% with the field goal attempt.
Really?
If it was successful.
I mean, that's still a big margin, right? Like,
I mean,
that we're talking
about.
You're up
three late in the game. Yeah, most likely you're going to win. I don't know what to tell you.
Like
sometimes one of the things I complain about is
where did they start with the ball?
Obsessively hyper-focused on these situations where both outcomes are bad. In this case, both outcomes were good for the Seahawks.
Both outcomes were good for the Seahawks?
Either kicking the field goal or going for it, they were likely to win the game in that situation.
I mean, that's why I've dwelled less on this, because to me, they almost snuck a victory, right? The Seahawks, they came down. Sam Darnold did his job. And here was another thought that I had.
Because they actually threw the ball on that drive.
Exactly. I think, because Pete Carroll happens again, I understand that Mike McDonald is way younger. His defense is probably more prepared for teams like the 49ers than
probably
Pete Carroll
was. It was just last week on this podcast, we were talking about how the 49ers ran all over Pete Carroll the last at least two times they faced each other, and probably more than that, and that is why they fired Pete Carroll. You said these words, all thanks, Tristan.
It was a better
probably
Niners team.
Probably more prepared.
It was a better Niners. I don't think the Niners team is very good.
Well, without George Kittle and Brock Purdy, they're probably not very good.
Even that team that was on the field, I'm not super convinced was that good of a Niners team. And I think all...
Well, I'm saying that was... They played most of the game without George Kittle. Like, if you're looking for the pessimistic viewpoint on the Seahawks offense, you can't... I mean, it's easy to look for the pessimistic viewpoint on the Seahawks offense. If you're looking for the pessimistic viewpoint on the Seahawks, like, this is a golden opportunity to beat the 49ers with Ayuk injured, with DeMarcus Robinson suspended, with Kittle injured, and Jake Tonjes ended up beating them one-on-one, which is...
I don't think Jake Tonjes beat them one-on-one.
Fair.
Jake Tonjes beat Reek Woolen.
But Reek Woolen is one of them.
But the team played bad. Like, that's the thing where it's like, had they won, we would have left that game and been like, well, they won the game, and that's a good thing. But they still played bad while doing it. If Sam Darnold throws a touchdown there, it wouldn't have been like, oh, elation. Like in that moment, yes, beating the Niners. But when we're taking a step back and being like, is this team good? Their DVOA doesn't change that much if Darnold throws a touchdown, right?
Agreed. I mean, I think that the positive you would take from that is that the Seahawks would have
a division win and a hope of a tiebreaker over the Niners.
And reinforce that good things happen when you throw the football.
They don't learn these lessons. I don't think you realize the lessons. Like coaches, is this your first time with a defensive coach?
Seahawks did have periods during the Pete Carroll era where they threw the ball a shit ton. Okay?
And then Pete Carroll fixed the offense.
I don't dispute it.
He hated it. He hated every second that
he hated
it happened.
It when they lost the games.
Shoddy did nothing wrong either. He had the fucking Cowboys playing. I bet you their yards per play were a lot better than the Seahawks.
It was not so great in the second half, but I'm attributing that to the time. That's what I'm counting on for my fantasy team, at least.
5.5. They outgained the Eagles in that game by almost a yard per play better than the Seahawks. That's with this Cowboys team where people are like, oh, they have no running backs, right? CeeDee Lamb, if CeeDee Lamb maybe catches one of those passes, imagine how much better that number is too. So they are schemed badly. Like there's almost no arguing with it. This is a badly schemed team, at least in week one. Maybe they could turn around. But so the other Pete Carroll thing that I thought about was we may be in a situation where we now have the good offense and the bad offense. And it's basically like, is this team going to run the good offense or is this team going to run the bad offense? Because the good offense, when the Seahawks had to pass, like the drive at the end of the first half, right? They get downfield so fast. Anytime that they were passing the ball, like I understand the JSN fumble and that was brutal, but why are we using JSN in the same fucking way we did 2 years ago? Also,
I don't agree with that assessment.
There were a couple of moments where it's like, hey, okay, he could also go, fine. He could go out for passes. That was Ryan Grubb did not use JSN in that way.
You know what ways they use JSN? All the fucking ways, because he's the only receiver on this team that threatens a defense even remotely at this point. Like, I am not going to do the Cooper Kupp victory lap. It's a long season. Like, the concern with Cooper Kupp is not he doesn't have good enough hands and he's going to drop passes to him that are, you know, he's wide open for a first down. And the separation rate was not that bad, all things considered. But
Cooper Kupp is going to have better games than that. It was a bad game. Look, John Schneider's bad at this. We know that.
Clearly, JSN.
We have years of evidence that John Schneider is bad at doing this job.
JSN is here, and everyone else in the receiver core is.
Well, yeah,
because
they drafted a fucking guard in the first round. That's what happens. You know where they drafted JSN? In the first round of the draft.
I'm aware.
And they had a draft pick to do it again, and they didn't. They took a guard. It's a badly run team, and it's an interesting.
But he's apparently really good. All the reviews were very positive on Gray Zabel. It just didn't translate into the team gaining yards on offense, weirdly.
Because
might speak to
it
the unimportance
matter.
Of guards.
We've been over this. We know all of this information going in. Ugh, I hate this team. I fucking hate them. Alrighty, week one. I will say, much to complain about.
That they're giving you a lot to complain about?
I mean, is that not what we have? That's part of the fun of football. I left the game and I was like, much to learn from.
Oh, God. Oh, it's truly all takes. Hey, Tom can't untie it. Love to see it.
There were players who played well in this game. And if we could just go out and find another Ernest Jones, that would be great. But beyond that, I have very little faith in them. And your idea of them like learning lessons from this, and they might play some probably worse defenses. I don't know. I guess we'll see. And some of the stuff that they try to do probably will go better than it did against the 49ers. But the point isn't to, like, that's how you get to. They probably are going to be the over, and they might be around the playoffs, and then they'll lose. That's not the goal. The goal is not to get to, like, we've eked it out enough to get to 10-7 and confidently over.
10-7? We're 10-7.
What was the over-under? 7.5?
Just win a fucking game.
7.5?
The over-under was 8.5. I think they are now considerably more likely to go under than not.
But the goal is not to get to 9-8 and sniff the playoffs for a couple of weeks. This is a team that there is talent. Sam Darnold went 14.
If that wasn't the goal, they would have fired John Schneider.
They
can tell you it's not the goal all you want. Their decision with John Schneider indicate to them, we just want a baseline level of competence.
I agree. They want to go out there and keep making their money for 49ers fans. That's great. Have fun.
So
I am instantly done with this team. No, I think they are trying to do it. They just don't know how. Their approach to winning football games is a wrong approach to winning football games. And they showed us that in week one.
Hopefully it's just 1 week. But
again, what
to paraphrase Mike McDaniel, they can't run any less play action than they did.
Oh, zero? Zero's not a number anymore? Wait, what did Mike McDaniel say?
The good news is it can't get any worse. I think he may have said that prior to the Tyreek Hill situation. Do you want to transition from this to a team that does have higher aims and aspirations, or should we do our NBA Seattle update first?
Did I have any other thoughts on this game?
One disappointment to another.
Was there anything good that happened? I really like Josh Job.
Yeah.
I think that might be it. No. Nick Emanwori looked great on that one play.
So suffered a high ankle sprain, could potentially go on IR by the end of the week. Jake Bobo is out of concussion protocol, working back for week two. I think that's a positive.
Yeah.
Upgrade the receiver room.
Sure is. Boye Mafe, I didn't really notice him that much on watching the game live, but seeing the PFF grade, I was like, okay, that's cool that he was getting pressures. And that's it. Oh, and Sam Darnold, again, I will give John Schneider credit for the Sam Darnold decision. I think he handled that situation completely right. The decision to draft Jalen Milroe in the third round as somebody who could run a tush push and then not utilize it in the situation that they had obviously placed for them to do it. Not a great situation, but it's the worst coach. Nick Sirianni is a better coach. Are you thinking about that? He's been to two Super Bowls.
Certainly the most Italian of coaches.
There's almost no argument that he might be the most winningest coach in NFL history. So,
in terms of percentage?
Yeah. He has to be pretty freaking high up there.
I don't think coaches matter that much. I mean, Philadelphia would be an example of the reverse.
Their front office is so much better than John Schneider, obviously.
Yeah, the Seahawks have tried a bunch of different coaches. Two different coaches.
Two?
And a bunch of different offensive coordinators. And the results always still stay the same. Philadelphia has gone through a bunch of coaches and a bunch of different offensive coordinators. And the results also stay the same for them, which may point to a common denominator in both of those situations.
Yeah, no arguments for me about John Schneider being the problem also. The roster isn't good. I think the roster, when put in a perfect situation, can be good. And I think it is there. And again,
it could be above average.
Clint Kubiak, it might be different next week. But if this is the game plan, if they're like...
It has to be different next week.
If literally they go into this and they're like, wow, we were one play away from winning. And I think knowing NFL front offices or knowing NFL coaching staffs, I don't think they're taking a hard look at themselves and saying our decision to run the ball that much was wrong. That never happens.
I do think they're looking at it and saying we should use play action more. You know how I know this? Because Mike McDonald said we need to use play action more.
Okay, fine. That is fine. Maybe they'll use play action more. But what I'm saying is...
But that's the whole point. Play action is the thing that matters.
They passed fine.
I think actually matters less than play action, I would argue.
I mean, I think their yards per pass wasn't bad necessarily.
I mean, it certainly was still higher than their yards per rush. It's hard not to be. But I would tell you that on a per yards per play basis, I doubt the difference between play action pass and non-play action pass is greater than non-play action pass and run. But I think it's getting closer.
6.1 yards per pass, which I think is still bad. And yes. 3.2 yards per rush, which is awful.
Well, many of those rushes went to Ken Walker III, and I would be just fine never watching Ken Walker III run for the Seattle Seahawks again.
If they released him tomorrow, I mean, there might be value for him in free agency. Like, they, just trade him. Like, if you could get a 6th round pick for Ken Walker, goodbye. George Helani should be getting those carries. Do you know how many running backs throughout the league told us that running backs don't matter? Was Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt a 7th round pick? And it's awesome. God, who is the other one who had? There was another young running back who only had like a couple of carries. RJ Harvey, I think it was like 6 carries for 50 yards. It's just another thing John Schneider's bad at, but whatever. He doesn't do anything good, so.
Made a terrific trade involving Russell Wilson. I do think he's actually very good at trading mid-round picks for veterans. Those trades have generally gone very well for the Seahawks.
Sure. I mean, a lot of teams are very good. When you, they're good the mid-season.
But if it was that easy, then everyone would just do it.
I think teams should do it more.
I agree, but they don't. So clearly there's value to be exploited from it.
Okay. Right. That is a very, I like that we've honed in on the one thing John Schneider does good, and there probably will be a veteran. Instead, he'll probably trade a bunch of everything for Tyreek Hill because he doesn't care about any of it. He doesn't care about 1st round picks and doesn't care about the background that Tyreek Hill has. So he has shown us repeatedly.
All right, NBA Seattle update sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza, and shout out to Pagliacci this week. Wednesday was the NBA's fall Board of Governors quarterly meeting, and Adam Silver gave a non-update on expansion, although maybe some positive things in there if you look hard enough. This question from my ESPN colleague,
your
Tim
Seattle
Bontes.
Seahawks.
Maybe some positives if you look hard enough.
If you look hard enough.
You've talked a bunch about the possibility of NBA Europe today, how the league, all the different arms of the league are working on it. You haven't mentioned local or domestic expansion at all, which is something that's come up a bunch in the past. Why does it seem that the focus of the league is more on the creation of a European league or expanding into Europe this way, as
Get
opposed
up, Tim,
to looking at domestic expansion?
I should have talked to him more.
I wasn't stopping you.
I'm not saying you were having to deal with children.
Yeah.
Children ruin everything.
10 to 15 of them. Adam Silver, again, I don't know why it seems that way to some people. It's not the case. I think there are independent people looking at potential domestic expansion and then others looking at opportunities in Europe, and I see them as completely independent opportunities. The fact is, no news to report today on domestic expansion, but it's something we continue to look at. We did discuss it at the board meeting. I think that we've spent a fair amount of time on the economic models around expansion. We've gotten into more of, I'd say, a deeper dive than what I last addressed the media on it. Certainly, which was July at the previous NBA Board of Governors meetings that I covered. Certainly now we know what our media contracts are, that helps in doing the math, at least over the next decade. Part of the difficulty in potentially assessing it is a sense of long-term value of the league, and a little bit maybe it's a high-class problem, but as with some of the recent jumps in franchise valuations, that sort of creates some confusion in the marketplace about how you might even price an expansion franchise. So I'll only say it's something that we continue to actively look at. I will also say, well, it's a completely independent look what we may do in Europe versus the United States. I think adding teams to an existing league where you have, from a national standpoint at least, a fixed pie of revenue is very different than looking for an opportunity in Europe where it's a clean slate. Well, there is an existing operation there. It's sort of a green field in terms of what the opportunity that might be. But to the extent anyone has taken from me a suggestion that Europe is more a priority than potential expansion in the US, it's not the case. I view it as two independent work streams here.
What is NBA Europe? Like, what is the plan for this?
So basically, they are going to try to replace EuroLeague and tell these teams, we're going to do a better job making money from fan interest in Europe than you have been able to do.
But like on a day-to-day level, is it teams that are playing in the NBA in Europe?
No.
Or the NBA
existing
just
European clubs playing each
like
other
FC
in
Barcelona
an NBA sanctioned
and shit
league.
Like that. Who
yes.
cares? Why are we talking about this?
Well, because Adam Silver is talking about it.
Sure.
I don't think the reason is it's a discussion point because of how it impacts NBA domestic expansion.
The Seahawks have you so agitated about everything. But can I give one more if you squint hard enough about the Seahawks?
Oh, okay.
I told you this before. I thought I didn't care at all about the Seahawks. Not didn't care at all, but I thought I didn't care. And I got there and I went to the Niners home game. And it turns out I do, like, I wanted the Seahawks to win the game.
There's probably not that many Niners fans. Their games are a long way from San Francisco. It might be faster to travel from San Francisco to Seattle for a game than it is to get to Santa Clara.
It wasn't the worst ever. I mean, there's just going to be a bunch of Niners fans, and the Seahawks don't give a shit, of course. But, like, I did care about whether they won the game or not. Like, I wanted them to win the game. I wanted it to be good so badly. And I will say, the first couple of series, I was like, I noted, I was like, they haven't had like any like big negative runs. You know, like the line hasn't been like blown up in a way, which if that's the threshold, like they're just bad, but they're not really bad, then there's some positives to take. Anyway, what they're saying is if the NBA goes to Europe and basically, I don't know, hostile takeover takes over the European EuroLeague or whatever it's called,
that's just like EuroLeague.
Free money to these owners.
Yes.
Whereas expansion, they're splitting up a piece of the pie and there are a few owners who don't want to do it. That's where we are. That's
it. Enough owners who haven't gotten there yet.
Adam Silver wants the teams. Like, it's not an Adam... But also, it's a thankless job, but he's getting paid a hell of a lot of money to do it, and he's wanting to do that, right? He's volunteering for this. But, like I don't have sympathy for Adam Silver, but if he was being honest, he'd be like, I'm trying to get these motherfuckers on board, and they're not yet. In Europe, hostile takeover of NBA Europe, that's just free money to them.
Yeah.
And that is all that matters, is capitalism. It's a business.
That's how it works.
But also, I wouldn't say that they're good at capitalism necessarily. Like, not all business, just because a business is doing it and viewing it doesn't mean that they're making the right decisions. But that's not up to us to determine, because it's up to 30 really rich guys.
Yep.
So, right.
With that, it's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
So, I was telling Kayleen a few weeks ago that I think I've been thinking thoughts which definitely, I think, medically would be considered signs of depression. And like, I can't stress this enough. I feel good and totally fine, aside from the obvious and pervasive reasons to feel depressed every day as an American. But anyway, I was feeling a certain amount of anhedonia, and that, you know, you wake up, the world turns, you have ups and you have downs, but ultimately all of life only leads to one place. Morrissey said it best, that in the cemetery gates, people are born and then they live and then they die. But what's the point? Until it hit me. Life still has no meaning, of course. But one of the things that we have to live for is these last 18 days of Mariners baseball. Baseball seasons are interminably long, but actually they're short. It's just a bunch of blips in the road, ticks up and down in the schedule to lead us to this place, where with just over 2 weeks left in the baseball season, we get to be watching a Mariners team striving to be AOS champions for just the fourth time, and the first time in almost a quarter century. We're lucky enough to be here and to witness history. The season Cal has had, Julio in his goddamn prime, Gino pushing for 50 homers, Brash throwing some of the nastiest pitches I've seen in my entire life. And this is it, folks. This is all we've got. Because the more that I think about it, there isn't a ribbon at the end of the road. I'm sure many others like me feel like there is a time when they'll have it all figured out. And guess what? That time doesn't exist. But what we can do is enjoy these rare few moments, like the Mariners being in a playoff push in mid-September. It's not something that happens very often. And right now, as they sit just a game back of the Astros with a legitimate chance to knock the Stros clean from the playoffs for the first time in almost a decade and the best playoff odds in the division, we get the absolute privilege of hanging on every single game at bat and pitch. Baseball is about these next 2 weeks, a whole winter of transactions, games and games. Leody Taveras, Donnie Barrels, Tyler Locklear, and the ins and outs of the everyday baseball leading us to this place. And if the Mariners division push doesn't give life meaning, then I don't know what does.
Wow, there it is. Love to hear it. I have one notable dispute. Julio Rodriguez is nowhere near his prime. We have many years of development to come. Let's go. Donnie Barrels, by the way, you saw who he signed with, right?
I did.
Texas Rangers. It was destined. What the Mariners need to do is start getting increasingly bad players. Just have them on the roster for a short period of time and just weave them to get them onto the Rangers roster to try to undermine their playoff push, which is the biggest obstacle to the Mariners making the playoffs right now, you would have to say. But yeah, four in a row. Started with a 28 to 4 combined scores Saturday, Sunday, the last two games in Atlanta.
The good
My
news
remember.
about game 28-4, yep. The good news about game two in Atlanta. I woke up and there's like NFL Red Zone on, right? And also, if you want to look for meaning in life, it is those last few moments of the clock ticking down before Scott Hansen
Wow.
welcomes us to 8 hours of mostly commercial-free football. Thanks, ESPN. They were had some commercials last year too. They were dabbling, but Scott Hansen welcomes us to 8 hours of commercial-free football, and know that for the next 18 weeks, you've got NFL Red Zone in your life unless you brutally have to go to a Seahawks game. But the Mariners had just won the game by that point. I was like, that's great. I don't even have to pay attention to this one. I don't have to stress about it. Like, that shit is over right now. So I was very appreciative of the Mariners. But this
It
Cardinals
was
series.
entirely over by the time I actually was aware, had remembered that the Mariners game started at 9 a.m.
I mean, this Cardinals series, it's funny, like a week ago or late last week, a lot of the dialogue would have been about like being annoyed with Dan.
I like that a lot of the dialogue would have been about it, as if like you yourself weren't complaining about Dan.
Oh, don't swing at that, Naylor. All right, got all of it. So I it took a week longer for the Mariners to get to this place because I was like, oh, they're gonna sweep the God, I can't even remember.
The Rays?
Yes, I think so. I was like,
Well, it turned out
no,
they.
I thought they were gonna like crush the Guardian. Like at the end of that series, I was like, the Astros are gonna play the Yankees, and then the Mariners are gonna like getting swept by the Rays was not good.
Not a fit.
But do comfortably well in this time period. And I was like, we won't even be complaining about this in a few short days.
I mean,
And
Victor Robles just needed to return to the roster. That's all, active roster and his suspension. That's all that was
we had no
necessary.
idea.
A dramatic game changer. Any other big picture thoughts on the Mariners?
Let's freaking go.
Should we talk about Josh Naylor for a little bit here?
Sure.
He's very good at hitting at T-Mobile Park in a small sample size, which is a nice thing to have, I would say.
Just flew out a second ago.
Well, you know, you can't win them all. No, nobody hits 1,000. And Ryan Divish had a piece in the Seattle Times on a possible Naylor new contract extension or via free agency. Per MLB sources, would likely be something higher than the 3-year, $60 million deal the Astros gave to Christian Walker. Since Naylor is 28, I'm going to interject here. He's also good at baseball.
I mean, Christian Walker was good at baseball, but yes.
It wouldn't be the 5-year, $130 million deal that Paul Goldschmidt got from the Cardinals in 2020. So somewhere in between those ballparks is what we're talking about here. I mean, certainly, you mentioned with Tyler Locklear gone, the Mariners have no answer at first base next season. So re-signing Naylor makes a lot of standpoint from that. It makes a lot of sense from that standpoint.
Sure, sign me up for it. Done. I mean, I honestly like they have some money coming, but like the Cal extensions happened, the Julio extensions happened. They've got pitching in waiting when they're going to need more pitching. So maybe Ben Williamson is the third baseman in the future. Like, I think Chino's probably not coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the idea here, is that the Mariners are more likely, even though, Naylor was originally seen as just a rental, more likely to re-sign him given
He's also
their
5 years
need
younger, 6 years
first
younger
base
than.
rather than third base.
I
Sure.
mean, the extension that you would give to Naylor, like you feel no baseball extension is safe, and baseball players can just get bad overnight, and then they can just get good the next year. But like the for Gino being at 34, like Gino will still be a professional baseball player for probably another 4 to 6 seasons, possibly more, but like the quality is going to go down at some point, and Naylor's more or less in his prime right now, so it makes a lot more sense there. And you also just have Ben Williamson, so I mean, it's good news that they called up Harry Ford because they're really working him into the lineup a lot.
Apparently, they want to be very patient with him and give him the chance to catch pitchers in the bullpen before they throw him into a game.
Sure. That seems like a plan.
Entering tonight, Naylor at T-Mobile Park since joining the Mariners, 379, five doubles, five home runs, 1162 OPS.
And it's totally sustainable.
Don't know when you became the person you did. I
I mean,
guess
I'm
when
just being honest. We know it's going to go like if he played a full season at
Yeah, but
T-Mobile, which is
where?
not going to be that good.
And Cal Raleigh obviously isn't going to hit 60 home runs just because he was on pace to do it in May. Some
Whoa.
bad news on the
Do you
Mariners.
actually think that?
That
I
he
mean,
isn't going to hit, that he
probably
is going
not
to
going
hit
to.
60 home runs.
Yeah.
Probably not. We'll see. The bad news for the Mariners, Ryan Bliss suffered a meniscus tear during his rehab assignment at AAA Tacoma, underwent season-ending surgery. So just really kind of a lost year for Bliss, who it was cool that he was going to maybe be able to get back after his surgery early in the season, but now we're looking ahead to 2026 spring training with Bliss.
Let me give you an over under right now of 58 and a half.
Games for Ryan Bliss.
Home runs for Cal Raleigh, obviously.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No offense to Ryan Bliss, but don't care.
Okay, so where is Cal right now? And did Mariners have 18 games left? Is that inclusive of today or is that after today?
What do you mean is that inclusive? It's the amount of home runs. Well, if he hits a home
No, no,
run
no.
today.
You
Oh,
said he has 18
the 18,
games left.
yes, that's inclusive of today.
Okay, so 17 left after tonight, basically a tenth of the season. We take the over.
You think he's getting to 59 or 60?
Yeah.
It's going to be a very fun last series if he does.
I think it's going to be a very fun last series as long as the Mariners are in contention. All right, should we do the roundup?
Absolutely, we should.
Seattle Sounders coming back from the international break. Christian Roldan busy during it. He played the full 90 for the USMNT in Tuesday's 2-0 friendly win over Japan. So nice to see Christian working back into the mix with the national team after his success for the Sounders during League's Cup, during their title run. So the last two games the Sounders played en route to the League's Cup title were at LA Galaxy and versus Inter Miami, as you'll recall. The Sounders now will flip those in MLS play, their first two games coming back for the break. At L or hosting LA Galaxy on Saturday, and then Tuesday they will be at Inter Miami in a rematch of the League's Cup final. That should be pretty entertaining. That's the start of 3 games in 9 days that wraps up the following Sunday at Austin. So, going to be some interesting decisions from Brian Schmetzer in terms of how to manage minutes, but thankfully, Albert Rusnak probably should be more involved after this little break here, and the Sounders showed an incredible amount of depth during that League's Cup run. One player who will not be there for Inter Miami in that rematch, Luis Suarez, who was suspended for 3 games by MLS on top of the 6-game suspension he received from League's Cup relating to the post-League's Cup final skirmish. But Sergio Busquets suspended only for 2 League's Cup games, so he will be available next Tuesday.
A dirty act. Just,
From Suarez.
yeah, no, it's unacceptable. Unacceptable in the sport.
Even an Italian had done it. Just gritty. Seattle Reign FC. 2-0 loss Sunday at Washington. Trinity Rodman had a brace scoring in both halves in DC. It was Rodman's first multi-goal game of the season. Washington remained unbeaten since Rodman returned to the lineup at the start of August. A little Rain news this week. Ji Seo-yoon, midfielder, headed on loan to Birmingham City ahead of the expiration of her contract at the end of this year. Ji had started as recently as August 24th, though only twice since the NWSL break. Played 39 NWSL games for the Rain over the past 2 seasons, finishing with 5 goals and 5 assists. The loss meant the Rain were caught by Gotham FC for sixth in the NWSL standings, now down to seventh via tiebreaker, and they're 1 point ahead of Racing Louisville, currently in the eighth and final playoff spot ahead of Louisville, visiting Seattle on Sunday. Louisville's been outscored by 5 goals, while the Rain have a +2 differential. It should be the first return visit by Bethany Bolser after the Rain traded her to Louisville last year. Seattle Storm. We talked about at the start that they have clinched a playoff spot. Now, even though they were the last team to get into the playoffs, it does not mean they will necessarily be the eighth seed. That does that.
And there's something about the way you said that. It's like, even though they've clinched a spot to the playoffs, doesn't mean they will actually play in the playoffs.
No. They were the last to get in by a considerable margin. Golden State had clinched, I think, over the weekend or even last week. But The Storm can still finish ahead of the Valkyries, depending on the outcome of Golden State's season finale. Storm wrapped up 2 days early, one of three teams that finished their seasons on Tuesday. Valkyries on Thursday play at Minnesota, and then the opponent also potentially depends on Thursday's Vegas-Los Angeles game. So if the Valkyries win, they'll be the sixth seed. Storm will be the eighth seed. If the Valkyries lose, however, they go down all the way to eighth. Storm climb up to seventh. The eighth seed would face Minnesota, which is very interesting because the Lynx, who have lost twice to the Storm this season, including on their home court, one of just two losses they've suffered in regular season games at the Target Center. If they play hard and beat Golden State on Thursday, means they will play the Valkyries in the playoffs and get to avoid the Storm. So it'll be very interesting to see how they handle it. Nafisa Collier sat out on Tuesday at Indiana. She is expected to play in this one. And Indiana winning that game, rather, against Minnesota was also necessary for this whole scenario to make sense. So I don't know that that's necessarily what the Lynx are thinking. Obviously, they're playing at home, and you don't want to rest too much before the playoffs.
I don't think
the
Lynx are, like, super fretting the Storm right now.
Maybe a little bit, though. You can read it either way. So if the Storm do move up to seven, based on those results, we still don't know for sure who the two seed is going to be. Las Vegas needs to win at Los Angeles in the season finale on Thursday, which would bring
kind
them
of
to
done losing. So
a 16-game winning streak to cap the regular season. It's interesting. There was a period of time where Vegas was still kind of fraudulent, like including their game against the Storm. They were winning a bunch of close games to start this winning streak. Then at some point along the way, they have gotten unfraudulent. They won at Atlanta, a game that gave them the tiebreaker over the Dream. It is necessary for them to have a chance at the two seed. They beat the Lynx at home last Thursday. Asia Wilson, a dominant performance that factors into the MVP race against Nafisa Collier. Either way, Storm likely going up against one of the top two finishers in MVP voting, unless the Aces surprisingly lose and the Storm end up facing Atlanta in a 2-7 matchup. So, you know, we'll see. We'll not have a chance to fully preview that matchup before it starts on Sunday. Storm, obviously heavy underdogs either way, but it's intriguing. All four teams with home court advantage, the top four seeds in the WNBA, Storm split the series with every single one of them, oddly enough. The only teams they lost the season series to were Indiana, which swept them, and then the Washington Mystics, who won the series 2-1. Really, maybe
I would get your hopes up really high then.
That's not the point. The point is more that it's probably going to be, if it is a 1-8 matchup, it could be more competitive than the typical 1-8 matchup. What happened here in the Mariners?
It's like
game?
A filthy pitch from Gilbert. I would like to invite Logan Gilbert to start pitching good, but that was a pretty good pitch.
Well, to just start pitching good before there are runners in scoring position. Yeah. He's been great that. Just throwing a lot of pitches to get there.
Oh my God.
So the Storm also, by eliminating from the Sparks from the playoffs, perhaps more importantly long-term, have clinched a lottery pick.
I mean, it worked out great for them. This season could have gone better, but that combination of things happening was basically like going into the season, it was a little bit like, this is all that needs to happen for them to base level, like, this is a good thing, is Sparks are out, Storm are in.
The thing that would have been better is if they would have traded Vegas's first-round pick for Brittany Sykes rather than their own right before their slide in the standings and the Aces winning again 15 consecutive games almost exactly as soon as that trade happened. I think maybe all of those games were after the trade. So the Sparks are currently number three in 2-year record. If they win on Thursday against the Aces, who again need to win that game, they would then drop into a tie with the Washington Mystics, and they would be fourth going into the lottery because the tiebreaker between the two teams is your record, the worst record this season, where Washington has obviously been much worse than LA this season. But the two teams would split the lottery combination. So either way, the Storm are going to have a real chance at coming away with the number one pick in the 2026 draft.
Who is the number one pick? Do we know? We don't know right now.
We don't know yet. There's a lot of college players who could be in consideration. Spanish center Awa Pham is probably by executives considered, I think, the top prospect in the draft. She is a teenage center, much like Dominique Malunga. So, you know, someone else might be a better fit for the Storm. Certainly, Flauje Johnson would be a pretty natural fit in Seattle's lineup as it currently stands, although we'll see how much different things look between now and then. But either way, getting a high lottery pick, just very good news for would be very good news for the Storm.
I should also say, like, the Niners under, just seeing that Purdy's out for this handful of games, or looking like he's going to be out for a handful of games, and George Kittle already being hurt, it's kind of exactly what we talked about how little depth the Niners have. And the Seahawks lost this game, but they did the league a lot of favors overall in the situation. Mykal Williams, who I also was like pretty skeptical about, and PFF ranked number 122 out of 134 edges in his first game.
You know who else could have used Emeka Egbuka?
The 49ers?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying that the Niners are right. I'm
It's
just saying the Seahawks are wrong.
one of those ones like JSN where like a lot of teams are going to look back and say, how did we let him get this far? So should also shout out Erica Wheeler had the game-winning shot against the Lynx. A situation where, so the Storm had the magic number of one, needed either a win or a Sparks loss to clinch the playoff berth. My expectation the whole time, especially after they lost last Friday against the Liberty with a chance to clinch the playoffs, and then the game before that against LA, as we talked about on last week's pod, was that they were going to back their way in with Phoenix beating the Sparks and the Storm losing to the Valkyries in a wholly unsatisfying fashion. Phoenix ended up pulling all their starters because once Vegas made it clear that they were going to win, Phoenix no longer had the opportunity to move up from fourth in the standings. They're locked into a matchup against the New York Liberty, and LA was able to come back and win that game. So the Storm did avoid the scenario where they would have had to be waiting until Thursday to find out whether they made the playoffs or not while sitting at home. Certainly an unfavorable situation. All right, a little men's basketball news.
Really? Oh, I know what this.
You'd have meant to play in the Maui Invitational in
Hello.
2026, is the Big Ten's representative. The fact that the Huskies have been invited for the second time in their history, having previously played in Maui in 2010 when they had a ton of NBA prospects, were a perennial, not a perennial, but they were a consistent NCAA tournament team and had a much larger fan base than they do today. The fact that they've been invited back shows how much Maui has kind of fallen out of favor as some of these
Boo.
pay-for-play
Show
tournaments
how much we're in favor. Come on.
have grown up.
Do you think the Big Ten teams are not interested in going in the same way?
I think if Michigan State or
Well,
Michigan
sure. Yes.
or Ohio State or Wisconsin or Indiana or UCLA, I think if one of those teams were interested in going, they do like to not send teams too often, but I feel like they would have been ahead of the UW in the pecking order, which is why UW has not been since 2010. But they will face potentially former Pac-12 rival Arizona, plus BYU, Clemson, Colorado State, who is the Big Tw the Pac-12
Pac-12, yeah.
rep here. Although I guess they are having multiple teams from the Big Ten, the Big 12, if both Arizona and BYU are in the field. I think BYU is in the Big 12, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Colorado State, Ole Miss from the SEC, Providence, and VCU. So it'll still be a very fun tournament, and obviously a great setting for it. With all due respect to Palm Springs in the Acrisure Invitational, would take Maui and playing in a gym. Obviously, the Maui Invitational taking on even more significance. It overlooks the town of Lahaina that was devastated in the fires on Maui. So, it will be an emotional thing, I'm sure. Are you up football? We talked about at the start a 70-10 win Saturday against UC Davis. The 70 points tied their win at Oregon in 2016 for the most by the Huskies since World War II. Their eight rushing touchdowns were the most also since they played Oregon, in that case in 1951.
I mean, running out of fireworks is like that is I love the like
They ran out. I
you
didn't hear this part.
didn't know that they ran out of
No.
fireworks? They put it on the screen. They were like, sorry, like they scored a touchdown and we're like, we ran out of fireworks. I just love having a physical representation of just how much they scored.
You should be prepared against UC Davis. I mean, not that this is likely, but you just got to consider the possibility.
Of 10 touchdowns? Sure.
They never punted. Denzel Boston, the one time they didn't score offensively was because Denzel Boston had the first punt return touchdown for the Huskies since Rome Odunze against Cal in 2023, back when we were really riding high.
I remember that. That was like right at the beginning of the game, right?
We think we missed it.
Yeah.
Maybe we just had gotten there for that, but I think we missed it. Huskies somehow still, special teams still 111th in FPI efficiency after the punt return touchdown. Defense ranks 89th, and their offense ranks 8th. Dwan Williams Jr., 18th in QBR. The only bad news here, wide receiver Rashid Williams suffered a collarbone injury, will miss a few weeks per Jaden Fish. Jaden Fish, that's his son, maybe. Still not clear whether he's going to require surgery or not.
It's like Brian Kelly. Like, if Jed Fish takes a job somewhere else, he's Jaden Fish now.
I'm not going to answer the question of where Jed Fish would have to take a job to become Jaden Fish.
Actually, it was Jaden all along.
freshman Desmond Roebuck steps into the starting lineup.
I think Desmond Roebuck, he's definitely been the surprise so far in the first two games offensively. Somebody who I feel like Rain Vines Bright, RVB, who did have some catches in this one, including a 45-yarder. But I think he was kind of who we were expecting from the young receivers to step up. But
Roebuck, after spring practice, for sure.
Like, Roebuck being a factor is pretty nice. I mean, obviously, it's a pretty young receiving core now, especially with Rashid Williams being hurt.
Had four catches.
And Omari Evans injury.
Yeah, and he probably should be back for the Apple Cup, you'd think. But Roebuck had four catches for 77 yards and a touchdown. You mentioned Vaines Bright, true freshman, a couple others contributing. Justice Williams had two catches for 28 yards. Chris Lawson had a 22-yard catch. So really taking advantage of the lopsided game to get some of these young receivers some work. And that's exciting because, you know, you probably are going to need some of them at some point this season.
I mean, right now, just
sorry,
Justice
Williams, a redshirt freshman, just to clarify.
We'll see how long this holds up, because obviously UC Davis, you know, line play is going to be something that UC Davis, you're just not going to have the same level as a Big Ten team. But the way that the offensive line has been playing, and you look at these numbers from Jonah and from Adam Muhammad, like, right now, Jonah Coleman is, like, he's the offense at this point. And I think it was a little bit what we thought last year. We were like, Jonah's going to be it. He's the bell cow. Like, he's who they're going to be riding. I'm happy that he only got 15 carries, but getting five touchdowns in there, I'm like, Jonah could be making waves for himself nationally if he's able to keep doing this. And he's going to be, we'll see what happens against Wazoo. Obviously, we don't have to talk about a game this week, but like, he's going to be talked about a lot heading into that Ohio State game if they can fend off Wazoo.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's pretty cool for Jonah Coleman. And Damon, just like, I don't know. I mean, he didn't have the touchdowns, but just like a casual 254 yards on 25 passes.
He did for the second consecutive week have the lowest completion percentage of his starting career. So I am a little worried about Dwan.
Me too.
Yeah. So a bye this week.
Only
for the
eight
Huskies.
Carries for 64 yards also.
Oh, the other thing, they had three sacks in this one, which maybe you need more against UC Davis, but it was nice to see some of them. Zach Durfee got one. Also Jacob Lane and Isaiah Ward.
Kind of everybody you want to have a sack there.
Exactly. So bye week this week, and then next week we focus on the first Apple Cup back on a campus site since the two teams were in different conferences.
And the rejuvenated Cougs, I think they were underdogs or like slight favorites heading into the game last week, and then just a comfortable victory. So it was a little bit like, oh, okay.
They got our attention in a different way, certainly, than they did with their 10 win over Idaho, beating San Diego State 36-13 last weekend. Let's see. ESPN's model did start them out as 57% favorite. So not an upset according to ESPN.
The Huskies is 57% favorite?
No. Washington State against San Diego State.
Oh, it's even at 57% is not like
No, it's
huge
still
favorites.
Impressive to win by 23 points. I mean, they had reached 100% basically by midway through the third quarter. All right, let's wrap up by previewing the Seahawks weekend as they head out on the road for the first time this season to take on Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers at 10 a.m. Pacific time on Sunday. Seahawks, 2.5-point underdogs in this game. Steelers coming off an impressive win in the double revenge game against the New York Jets in week one, or at least an impressive game, I would say, for their offense, which looked a lot better than we would expect. They were 7th in EPA per play, only 13th in DVOA, which is interesting.
That's what I was going to say. I think there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors in that Steelers offense.
Aaron Rodgers' numbers, other than the touchdowns, weren't quite as good as I expected. 22 of 30 for 244 yards. He had a 63 QBR, which he did beat four times last year. So it's not quite, definitive evidence that Aaron Rodgers is back. I mean, the biggest issue he had last season was his inconsistency, including his performance against the Seahawks when he went 21 of 39 for 185 yards with an interception and had a 27 QBR and generally did not look comfortable against the Seahawks pressure. The hope is that Mike McDonald can pull that off again this year against somebody who does not like to get hit at this stage of his career, understandably.
Yeah, I mean the four sacks is something that I think they're going to be very excited about. And to Purdy, they didn't sack him a ton, but they did have like a fairly good pressure rate against Purdy. They're probably going to be able to get home a little bit better in this game. Also, Trent Williams is on the other side. Trent Williams, though, I did note
The
there was a
Trent
play
Williams stats.
should have been a false start early on in the game where there was like a long rush and Trent Williams left early, and I was like, I could see from the fucking 317, I was like, Trent Williams lost the step. I was like, Trent Williams finally got a little old
I
on that
mean,
play. There was a flag down.
his PFF stats were and et cetera were not good from this game.
There
Besides the injuries, if you want a reason for 49ers pessimism, it's how Trent Williams looked.
was a play. There was a funny play because it was like I was telling Luca, I was like, I'm the only one who knows what's going. Not true, but like the amount of people around us who knew what was going on in this play was somebody had a defensive holding or like a illegal contact for the Seahawks. I'm sure it was. I think it was Kobe or was it Reek? I don't remember who it was on the play that Purdy had an intentional grounding.
Yeah, in the
Do you know what I'm saying?
offset.
And so people were all mad about it. And I was like, people, they were like mad about the situation. And I was like, the fact that if he just goes down, that's just a penalty on us.
Right.
Like, this is like the fact that Purdy, like, it was a mistake. I mean, obviously, he's not going to know necessarily, but like, if Purdy just literally takes a knee there and goes down, it's just a penalty. And the grounding that he had, I was like, he gave us a gift of this being offsetting penalties in that situation.
I have often wondered about situations that way. You could argue that one penalty caused the other. Should they take the penalty that comes first? But then I guess you could
I
commit
don't think
all sorts of penalties intentionally after that.
I
So that's a flaw in my plan.
don't also don't
So
think
go ahead and
the
scratch that.
legal contact caused the pass rush.
Well, but the point is, like, there's a lot of times, like, why did he have to, ground the ball? Well, because of the fact that, his receiver got held, that sort of thing.
You never
So I.
have to ground the ball though. Like intentional grounding is not like a
Fine.
play that you have to do. You could just be sacked.
I don't want to get sacked. So I don't blame Brock Purdy for not wanting to.
Sure, fair enough. You're kind of not in the NFL anymore.
Oh, it's true. Not for many years.
I mean, DK Metcalf was a little bit of the story coming out of this game. Four catches for 83 yards on seven targets.
He was thoroughly fine. I mean, I guess maybe the Steelers' standards aren't very high. Like, clearly. DK Metcalf would make the Seahawks offense immensely better. There is no question about that, given the lack of playmaking alongside Jackson Smith and Jigba. But it wasn't like, oh my
I
God, I can't believe
immensely
we
better.
let
When
him
you
get
only
away.
pass like four times a game,
Well, maybe they
like
would pass it a little more if they had
think
DK
about
Metcalf.
how many targets JSN got, right? He got basically all of the
I'm
targets.
aware.
So there wouldn't have been that much. I'm telling you, if DK was on this team, do you know what would have happened by like halftime?
Helmet throw?
Yeah, he would have been on the sideline sulking.
I mean,
You
also,
don't
like,
have DK Metcalf when you think that you're going to run the ball 10,000 times.
no, you have Cooper Kupp.
I mean, Cooper Kupp is kind of made for that, isn't he?
He is. That was not a joke. That was serious.
Yeah.
He's a glorified Jake Bobo, or maybe unglorified. Maybe Jake Bobo is the glorified Jake Bobo. But also, like, one
You
of the
like that Tyler
catches that
Lockett performance?
I did got targeted one time, did not have a catch. But my point was not that Tyler Lockett was good. That was not my point. DK Metcalf, one of his four catches, though, was a pass that went out of his hands and then came back to him, which I'm not sure is a strategy I'd want to adopt going forward.
Fair enough.
So, nice game for Kelvin Austin, the third opposite him, had four catches and six targets for 70 yards. So,
It's so funny. DK Metcalf is thoroughly fine, but Calvin Austin gets a nice game
but the point
because,
is, Kelvin Austin was a fourth round pick. They didn't
sure, yeah.
trade a bunch and give up a big hand out a big contract to get him. So, to those whom much is given, much is demanded. Steelers were 14th in rush EPA per play, 20th in success rate in this one. It was almost all Tyler Warren.
Jalen Warren.
See,
I wish it was Tyler Warren. I love him. God, I want him so bad.
How did he do?
Pretty good.
I mean, I saw the Colts offense did pretty good, but I did not pay any particular attention to that game despite watching games in a bar that had everything on Sunday morning. I was mostly locked in on Steelers Jets.
7 catches for 76 yards. Tyler Warren, engine of the Colts offense.
Well, Jalen Warren with 11 carries for 37 yards was not the engine. Kenneth Gainwell, 7 carries for 19 yards. My guy Caleb Johnson is sitting on my fantasy bench, 1 carry, minus 2 yards.
Yeah, what the hell happened? Although I didn't really think Caleb Johnson is like particularly explosive. I feel like the players who end up, like the surprise players who end up doing well are like the like skinny guys like Bill, you know? Don't look up why that's his nickname. Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt. But like, those are the ones who end up doing really well in the NFL. But like the big bruising backs, we'll see on GT, but I was like, I don't know if I said this on the podcast, but I was like, I want to lock it in that he is like not a good NFL running back. But it's fine. I'm still a little bit like, you're running Kenneth Gainwell. Like, just take a shot with Caleb Johnson. More than a carry.
Well, hopefully we'll have more of that going forward, although I don't know that Caleb Johnson will be continuing on my fantasy bench after the waiver period expires. Even though the Steelers won this game, their defense was not good. 29th in DVOA in this one, 29th in pass EPA per play against 28th in rush EPA per play. Justin Fields going against his old team, 16 of 22 for 218 yards, was only sacked one time against a team with TJ Watt. Just the fourth start of his career with one or fewer sacks. Also ran for 48 yards and 2 touchdowns, and Breece Hall had 107 yards on the ground. So perhaps a more viable situation for the Seahawks offensive philosophy.
You're totally wrong about this, and I'll tell you why.
Because the Jets set up the run with the pass?
No, because everything that this Jets set up the run with the threat of Justin Fields running.
Oh, you didn't see scrambling Sam Darnold out there picking up first downs with his legs?
It is different. It is different. Do you remember who the Seahawks? I think they might have even interviewed him for. There was chatter about him for offensive coordinator. Is that right?
Arthur Smith?
Nope.
I don't know then who we're talking about now.
New York Jets offensive coordinator Tanner Engstrom. And the person who should be, I mean, obviously he's going with Aaron Glenn. That's fine. The Jets have it figured out somehow. Like, I feel like that game happened and the Steelers won, but the Jets actually won.
Right.
It was like Jets win by losing 34-32 because they basically they figured out how to use Justin Fields in a really effective way. And you look at it and you're like, Ben John, like maybe Tanner Engstrom was the guy for the Lions.
All right. Let's all, you just, let's you have to all just remain
keep digging
there.
Deeper down to the person who made it happen.
For a quarter and a half there, Ben Johnson certainly looked like the guy.
But Justin Fields was the second leading rusher for the Jets. Like, Breece Hall was awesome in this game. And there's just, when they're running, they're basically running like old school, like read option type offense. You know, it was read option, it was motion. Tanner Engstrom did a phenomenal job in this game. And the Jets offense did a phenomenal job. This is not Clint Kubiak's offense. Sorry. So I would take everything that the Jets did against the Steelers with an absolute grain of salt. The Clint Kubiak offense, we will see how it works, but not having the threat of a quarterback running in there. And again, I thought the play call that they did run with Sam Darnold, he scrambled, but then the one where they just rolled him outside to get the extra yardage to take time. I was like, nice. Good job. Good work there. But it's not Justin Fields, you know? And an unlocked Justin Fields is a dangerous proposition. And so I'm kind of like, I think we take this out and we start brand new and we assume that the Steelers are who we thought they were. Maybe they're not going to be a phenomenal defense, but I think there's very little to be taken from this game for the Seahawks the next week.
I mean, certainly you would expect them to be a much better defense than they looked like in this one. They added a pair of new corners this offseason. Jalen Ramsey acquired for Minkah Fitzpatrick in a pretty wild, it's not technically a challenge trade, but of sorts with the Dolphins, where they also got Jonnu Smith. And then Darius Slay, who they signed away from Philadelphia. Also new to the Steelers, Carson Bruner, who did not see any defensive snaps in this one, but did play on special teams and had a tackle.
There we go. Has to be a Steeler. Come on.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right, how are you feeling about this game?
Oh, terrible. Really bad. It'll be fine. No, I actually think this is going to be more like the what we thought that the Seahawks would. And I guess last week was two. I just thought the offense would be a little bit better. The defense will look better in this game. And even seeing how quickly the Jets got after Aaron Rodgers, I was surprised how good he did overall, but I'm like, I think the Seahawks are going to have four plus sacks in it, and I think Rodgers is going to look bad and make, you know, he doesn't make a ton of mistakes. He's not Brock Purdy and throw some of those balls up, which do we complain enough about Reek Willem? I just think Reek thought he was going to get picks on both those plays, and
I
he
mean,
just didn't. He didn't work hard on the last one.
well, I don't think that's it. I mean,
He got outworked on the touchdown. He got out hustled for it.
he got out fought, but I don't think it was like, well, I see him going over there, but I'm not going to ask myself to do it. Like, he didn't read the ball well. I mean, I think if we want to have like the big picture Reek Woolen discussion, look, a lot of his advanced stats last season were very positive. Struggle to know exactly what to take from some of those stats, and certainly some of them are cherry picked by people who are making specific arguments, for a point. They're starting with a conclusion and then looking for stats that back it up rather than the other way around, which is how you should do it. I do think, more like broadly speaking, when Reek Woolen played as well as he did as a rookie, you were thinking, wow, this is amazing, because he's doing this purely off his physical tools and whatever instincts he has, and not off any degree of experience playing cornerback or technique. And as he adds that experience and technique, he is going to become a star cornerback. I think 3 years later, Reek Woolen is basically the same player that he was as a rookie, for better or for worse.
I mean, I think he's a worse player, right?
I mean, he's less valuable because he just hasn't had the interceptions the way that he did
Yeah.
as a rookie. But in terms of like, the pure PFF grade sense, I think he is more or less the same player.
I mean, Josh Jobe looks great.
Agreed. And, I think there's an opportunity for all of those guys to play. Like, I don't know exactly how they would handle it, but Devin Witherspoon now is on the Seahawks injury report with a knee injury, was either limited or did not participate in practice on Wednesday, the first day they were required to release their participation report. So, there's going to be some snaps available there. Obviously, Emean Worry is out this week, some snaps there. Witherspoon's
Sorry, Ty Okada's got this.
And Ty Okada was not a great start for him, although that's not really like what Emean Worry is doing, is a role that's built around Emean Worry's skills, not around Ty Okada's skills. So, yeah, there you go. Uchenna Nwosu, we should mention, full participant in practice along with Jake Bobo on Wednesday. So an indication he should be ready to make his 2025 debut and beef up that pass rush and potentially make life difficult for Aaron Rodgers.
No, I think pass rush is going to get home. I think it's probably going to be a lower scoring game than this Jets Steelers game, for sure.
I'll take the under of that. The other guy we haven't talked about, by the way, Torrey Horton did not make an impact in week one, and the Seahawks really need Torrey Horton to make an impact.
Again, he just didn't have that many chances to. Like the amount of plays that were passed to JSN that were specifically designed throw, they just didn't throw. The amount of throws that didn't go to that went to wide receivers was outside of
And if you look at
JSN, just weren't that many, right? It was three targets for Kupp and zero targets for Torrey Horton. That's it. So three targets that weren't JSN targets.
If you look at people that are going to benefit from play action, I mean, obviously, Kupp and Bobo are the guys you're going to have on the field a lot of times in those situations. But Horton being able to get deep in that off of play action is, I think, something you're going to want to explore and investigate as the year goes on. So, the combination of him not playing very much and one play action is not a good one.
Yeah, it's a situation this game and seeing what, like, the obviously Justin Fields is a better player, but seeing what the Steelers did or what the Jets did with Justin Fields, it's like this is the type of game where I wish you were capable of rolling out Milroe for a series, but his inability and their like complete lack of confidence in him passing the ball. He came in and Luka's like, oh, I think he's going to pass. And I was like, there is a 0.0000% chance that Jalen Milroe throws this ball. He has been advised he is running no matter what. even if they could have every single player on the field, and Jalen Milroe will not be passing this ball. So
it's basically like when you play the Wildcat.
Yeah. Which is not bad. Like, you can get to that, but
it's better when you have both options available.
I think they're not using players right. You know, like Jalen Milroe just running straight up the middle for a yard is kind of like, cool. It was Barner that they used on the tush push. Is that right? It was hard to see. But was it AJ Barner that ran it earlier in the game?
What do you mean he ran it?
AJ Barner had a rush. And that's what I thought it was. Like, he got the tush push early on. Like, they're not running it with Darnold. So it's an interesting thing, but like, they're basically not using Milroe the right way either. And I do think there is a way to use him, but they're not. And so it's the type of game that's like, seeing what they did against Justin Fields, like, I mean, there's a quarterback that they have who can help with the situation, but he's not set up to do that even in the slightest. So
percentage chances of victory?
35%.
43%.
I know they're just going to sneak out of victory too. That's the thing. That's the annoying thing about it. It's like, it's the same shit as last year.
I did enjoy like the talk on the broadcast. You know, like, oh, the Seahawks have done so much to try to get a better home record. And I was thinking at the time, like, well, yeah, they're probably going to have a better home record this year and a way worse road record because that's how regression to the mean works. But then they just lost their home opener instead.
But like, what does that mean? They've done so much to get what? Literally, what does that mean?
They showed them a video of highlights from Lumen, players, a video of highlights from Lumen Field, and talked about the home, importance of home field advantage.
Maybe they should show fans a highlight of video. Like, what? Like, the players weren't trying at home before? It's fucking stupid.
I agree.
It is a stupid thing. They're just like, oh my God, I'm so moved. Players played well at home? I thought we weren't supposed to try. It's dumb as shit. Stupid franchise.
Well, you're the one giving them season ticket money.
I told you this is going to be the last year. It is percentage chance of me with season tickets went up on Sunday.
All right, you want to talk about the franchise being bad at things?
What's that?
They rolled out the rivalry jerseys after we talked last week, and I assume they call them the rivalry jerseys because they're the UW's rivals.
I just can't even like to. I guess every team needed to have a rivalry jersey, right?
Well, like, did you not show them to people? No one brought this up. No one mentioned this.
It's good. They think this is a positive thing. Like, to me, the idea that Oregon has good jerseys is just like laughable. Their jerseys are fucking dumb, right? Like, they don't look good, carte blanche. It's not Seahawks colors. It looks stupid. Everybody hates them. They have one good jersey, and that's the jersey. If they were wearing those jerseys, they would have won on Sunday.
The throwbacks?
Yeah, the throwback is it. That is it. If you have, just settle on the one. If you need a rivalry jersey, just do a version of the throwback. Everything else they've done is terrible. And they're an abhorrent franchise. They make the Mariners look good.
Wow. I guess they did win wearing the throwbacks last year against Denver, so they've got that going for them.
They wore them a few times. I know they beat the Browns the previous year in them. I think they lost a game in the throwbacks also.
I mean, I'm sure they have. Odds are good.
No, I hated it. I hated everything about it. Even not even just because of the Oregon thing. They just are ugly jerseys.
I mean, you know, they're trying things. We didn't talk about the Kraken unveiling glow-in-the-dark third jerseys for the 2025-26 season, which, again, they're trying things.
If the lights are off more, I'm for that.
I believe
hockey is the most fun when the lights are off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They should play the whole game with the lights off.
Don't see any potential issues there. Mm-hmm. All right. On that note,
thanks for listening. I love the Mariners, like, playoff mustaches. Just like,
oh, I don't know about this yet. I haven't watched a game in a while.
Cal's got a mustache now.
You love it, obviously, even though you've gone away from the mustache.
Yeah, no, I think I'm done with mustache life. It was good while it lasted, you know? But I'm sad that the Huskies are not playing this weekend. That is what I'll have to say. The full league, NFL is great. We were so back. Sunday night, come on. That was awesome.
Missed it entirely. Didn't see one single second.
If Dan is Dan growing a mustache, God, I hope he, if Dan isn't growing a mustache, everybody else looks good with them. I Dan better. Usually it's supposed to be a playoff mustache, but I like that they're doing it early.
I would say that Dan Wilson growing a mustache could change the entire narrative about him.
No, things might be about to get a whole lot better for Dan. Mustache Dan Wilson may never be able to go back.
Okay. Now, thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Okay, you have stories to tell?
Oh, Gino. Woo. Gino giveth and Gino taketh away. Hello. Whew, that's stressful. We just like can't give up a run.
You have stories to tell from my wedding reception on Saturday?
Do you have stories to tell from your wedding reception? Okay. Two of them. You haven't heard these stories. First off, you are much more willing to talk about this podcast in public than I am.
I mean, yeah.
Your dog popped up one time during the podcast and I was like, somebody's behind you.
What?
I was like, look out. Because I couldn't see the dog, and then the head just came up like right behind you. And I was like, get down.
This is the last thing you see before you die. Oh, listen,
yeah,
never.
It's gonna be hilarious when I post the clip online. Grok will say it's a meme and allow it. There was like, I was talking to Grace's family, tall dude, and then various sisters, and then there was an aunt who popped up.
Yeah.
And she was like, you two have a podcast together, and I'm like, we sure do. And she's like, I'm gonna start listening, and I was like, don't do that.
It does seem like a strange choice. Grace's family is from LA, not Seattle sports fans.
I was like, I think whatever you think this podcast, I'll do it Pete Weber style. Whatever you think this podcast is, it's not.
I don't know if that counts as Pete Weber style, although you did say it that way.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's not a thing you want to do. Because I think there are people who have a perception of what this podcast might be, but they're going to get alternative takes on each row.
Oh, God. I don't know if many people are even looking for standard takes on Ichiro.
I think people are looking for standard takes on Ichiro. That shit plays. We don't
know.
No,
do I'm
that.
Saying most of the world just is not Seattle sports fans.
Sure, yes. I'll give that up also. I was like, we've gone out of our way to try to not have fans for more than a decade, and we're not changing. So,
but huge thanks, by the way, to Pagliacci for hooking us up with the late night snack pizzas at the reception. They went like that. Really, in hindsight, needed to order more.
Man. Dang, what was the exit feel on that one? So yeah, I was just like working through my depression in regards to the Seattle Mariners. That's a thing.
You know, it's not, the Pelton cast is not for everybody.
But maybe not for anybody. I was definitely like, I was like, it's great to meet you. That would be a really bad decision. 115 exit velo. Oh, man. Whew.
It was in Julio's out to lead off the bottom of the sixth.
That he lined up. We're not still on the podcast. We can just talk.
Okay.
Were you saying that? Were you narrating that podcast style? Or were you?
I was, yes.
Okay.
Maybe that's what people want. Or maybe it's what they don't watch, which is why we're doing it.
I thought Jan's speech was like, I thought it was pretty impressive. Everybody said that she roasted you during her speech.
Many people did call it that, yes.
Would you agree with that, Luca?
Yeah.
You thought Al was roasted? 100% roasted. Wait, come here, Luca. Do your impression of Jan's speech. Come here. This is going to be good.
Is the impression going to involve not holding the microphone to your face?
Stay calm.
Wait, you have to talk in tribute to Jan. Don't do a Jan tribute by not talking to the microphone.
Okay, so I never thought I'd see this day. I, to be honest, thought I would be single for life when I first heard about the relationship. I was thinking about how surprised I was, and I really thought that, you know, when he got a little older, it was going to be a little bit harder for him to, you know, find someone. But, you know, they seem happy. So that's all.
Don't forget that she mentioned having three grandchildren. So Jan is fulfilled.
Yeah, she did mention that.
What's a grandchild? A Jan tribute? Jan, give a speech. Oh, wait, hold on. I have another story to tell. What you have more to say?
She did all this while half talking into the microphone.
Not even half. I would say it was way less.
She was just holding it by like her waist.
20% tops.
While she was doing her speech.
It was a true tribute.
So nobody could hear her. There was things that people were laughing at. And I did not know at all what she was saying.
Non-professional Third Pelton brothers have a tendency to be unable to grasp the concept of a microphone.
Has three grandchildren. Two children, and Al has a dog on his lap.
Yeah, you're just stating facts. I lost my train of thought. I had a funny thing to say.
We only got 8 to 10 of your children at the wedding.
The funniest thing was Jan was like, I've never held a microphone before. And I'm like, I feel like if I discovered this device for talking into, like, and I never used it before, I wouldn't assume I should hold it by my waist. I'm like, having used a microphone isn't like that big of a prerequisite for talking into
a microphone. But also, we know that she has used a microphone because she's appeared on this very podcast.
Yes. Okay, so I don't know if you children have heard the story even. You in the car when I told it. So this dude came up to me. I was like walking out after the wedding. I had one of Grace's friends, I think. I don't know. I can find a photo of him and run it by you. He had dark hair. I assume that anybody I didn't know wasn't Tim Bontemps. Was Grace's friend.
You do know Tim Bontemps, as it turns out.
Well, yeah, you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
He comes up to me and I'm like standing outside after I'm all exhausted and shit. And he's like
at 10 p.m.
It was like 11 p.m.
Okay.
I don't know. But it's like standing a lot. Like, this is a lot of talking for me.
Oh. Sorry.
Sorry. You know my feelings about talking to people. And he was like,
you're saying a lot of people wanted to come up to you and talk to you at my wedding.
You had to.
I enjoyed it.
You like talking to people more than I like talking to people.
It is a thing that people would not guess about us based on our personalities, that I am actually much more extroverted in many ways than you are.
Keelan had to leave to take this motherfucker home.
I was very sick.
You had like 103 degree fever.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I'm glad you feel better, Ty.
But so this dude comes up to me and he was like, top three fantasy picks, go. And I'm like, I.
Okay, interesting. Because when you started that story, I thought it was going to be one of Grace's friends came up to me.
No,
and
no.
Said, settle a bet. First. No, oh. said, settle a bet. Who's your brother? Or point out your brother.
What was the bet?
Well, I don't know what the bet was exactly. But the person
I want to see who the other guy was that they thought it was.
You can see him. It was Chris, our cousin Chris, was the person they thought was you.
I went up to you. You were still bothered by this today. I didn't realize how hurtful it was. When the first word I said to you was, I didn't even say hi. I said, I thought I would look way better than you, but I just look a little bit better than you.
I just think it, like, nothing could better encapsulate the relationship between us.
Apparently you were still scarred by it today. You call me sensitive, but you're like, I'm still scarred by it. Anyway, I have to tell this fantasy.
It's not like I refused to do the podcast for 2 years.
What? Is that the lore?
It's unclear which of us is responsible for that.
Well, we know who's responsible for it, but it's not me.
Okay.
Also, I wish it's funny that that's become, like, I don't know if I want to talk about the reality of the situation, because it's more funny that we had a feud for multiple years.
Of course it
years.
Is, yeah.
And I prefer
Bit
that.
The legend.
I was telling to Kayleen, like, how hilarious the opposite is. But, okay, so anyway, this dude comes up to me. Wait, you seem bothered.
I'm just confused.
What are you confused by? Do you not remember those years?
Oh, the opposite. The Seinfeld episode?
No, how opposite the reality of us feuding is.
Oh, yes, yes.
But that even sounds weirder.
It definitely does sound weirder, I agree.
But, oh my God, that was foul, right?
Yeah, that's foul.
Julio had a ball, 115 exit velo, just a lineup. Sucks. But thank you, Tay. Anyway, he's like top three fantasy football picks. And I'm like, just out of nowhere. He wasn't like, hi.
Also, the season has begun. Kind of a strange question for after the season.
I'm like, I don't know. I was like, I'm not sure. And he was like, come on, this is what you do. And I'm like, is it what I do? It reminded me of when Ben Stiller was on news radio and he was like, you know, with your wacky zoo crew in the morning. He was like, I know what you do out here. But I was like, is that what you think this podcast is? You would never in a million years guess how hilariously off my answers were for this.
Because oh, really?
I was put on the spot. I hadn't thought about it. I was put on the spot. And I also didn't know. It wasn't a like fantasy football sleepers or who are going to be the best players. It was just fantasy football picks. And I was just like, I don't know. And I said, Travion Henderson, fairly normal.
Okay.
Stuttered for like a solid 30 seconds. This is when I was like, I am not sure. And he was like, two more. And I was like, okay, sir.
It's quite a demanding conversation.
The second one got a little more crazy. And I said, Ricky Pearsall.
Okay.
And I was like, that's a funny one. Do you take? I didn't say Mekic Buka, anybody like that. The third one, fantasy football pick, Lamar Jackson.
Oh,
okay. The number one scorer in fantasy last year.
Well, yeah. You know, you
Rick, they're just literally a random assortment of players. I was like, I felt like it was like the three players that I could think of that randomly came to mind. I'm here down here with the wacky zoo crew right now. Hey, I mean, Kyle Pitts had a pretty good game.
Ricky Pearsall did have 4 for 108. He had a nice
did he
start,
really?
So,
okay,
yeah.
Well, to that person, I say, there you go. I've given you the best fantasy football player of all time, basically, as a fantasy football pick. And Ricky Pearsall and Travion Henderson.
I believe we would say that
he did ask after case, the fantasy draft, two games had been played at this point.
We're doing you a favor.
Yeah. I thought that was, I was just like, I came up with the worst answer. But also, did you hear that? So Randy, obviously,
yeah,
big Arizona State fan. Are you aware that Arizona State was in Stark Vegas?
No.
Do you know what Stark Vegas is?
Mississippi State, Starkville.
Okay, he knows. He knows very little about college, but he knows that much.
I don't know like current college, but I know nicknames and locations and things like that.
Somehow at your wedding, there was both Randy, big Arizona State fan, and a rival Mississippi State Bulldogs fan.
Huh.
So hardcore of a fan that they were watching the game on their phone. Isn't that crazy that of literally like these two random teams who were playing, even the fact that Mississippi State and Arizona State are playing each other is random, that both of them could have been at the wedding, and then Arizona State's like in a position to win, and I didn't see this, but they lost the game, and then Mississippi State rushed the field. Did you see the pool? They flipped the bitch. But like, that's a clone highline, Tay. You like that? Yeah. But that happened, and I almost texted Randy and just be like, I went over to that person and slapped him in the face for you.
Wow.
I wasn't 100% sure who it was, so I would have had to have slapped everyone.
On that note,
that's all you got?
I don't have any particular stories to tell.
The opposite is even better.
Definitely way weirder.
They thought it was Chris, though.
Yeah.
I did. Somebody also, a random person came up to me and said that I looked like Ryan Gosling.
Okay. Not
I will take that. No, that was, I guess I'll do that as another story. They were like, has anybody ever told you? And I'm like, Leo Messi.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, Leo Messi. Yeah.
And I'm like, uh-huh. And then they're like, Ryan Gosling is Ken. And I was like, they have. Because
really?
It has happened before. And she was like, that's
enough.
She was like, that's a compliment. And I was like, I'm taking it as a compliment.
I mean, yes, obviously.
I was like, it's like Ryan Gosling and a person who's like stereotypical perfect male. Like, yeah, dog. I don't know how I could take that as an insult.
If only your outfit for the wedding had been one of Beach. Ken's outfits.
I didn't have enough. What's it called when you have the tassels on your like a Western shirt?
Right. Fringe.
Fringe, I guess. Is that what it's called?
I don't know.
Anyway, I should have gone for more than that. I saw Paul had like a, his tie was kind of like that. It was a little bit like extended bolo.
Yeah.
Is Paul the guy who's not good? Paul's good.
No, he's not good.
Oh yeah, no, he is like all time number one. It, if you ask him how he's doing, he doesn't just say good.
Oh,
you are,
well,
you are related to Paul.
If anyone was listening to the podcast before this, surely this has been enough to convince you not to.
Yeah, don't do it.
Our first advice. We should start the pod that way instead of ending it that way.
Hello and welcome to the Fabulous Pelton Cast. Turn this off, please.
Thanks for listening. Now turn this off for real.
Thanks.